Listen to David Wells. It is one of the defining marks of our time that God is now weightless. Those who say they believe in God consider him less interesting than television, his commands less authoritative than their appetite for affluence and influence, God's judgment no more awe-inspiring than the evening news, and God's truth less compelling than the advertiser's sweet fog of flattery and lies. God is now weightless. Just think about it for yourself. Think about it for the average believer. How much time does God take up in your mind and your thinking? Now, I don't mean Bible reading or church attending or Christian things that we do or even praying. How much time does God, thinking about God, who God is and what God is like, how much time do we devote to that? Does God fill our horizons as the dominant person in our mental, emotional, physical landscapes? There's a question for all of us. Let me turn the spotlight on myself, on pastors. Here's Eugene Peterson. Pastors are abandoning their posts left and right at an alarming rate. Please do not mistake me. They are not leaving their churches and getting other jobs. Congregations still pay their salaries. Their names remain on the church stationery and they continue to appear in pulpits on Sundays. But they are abandoning their posts, their calling. Pastors have gone whoring after other gods. What they do with their time under the guise of pastoral ministry hasn't the remotest connection with what the church's pastors have done for most of 20 centuries. The pastors of the world are changing into a company of shopkeepers, and the shops they keep are churches. They are preoccupied with shopkeepers' concerns, how to keep customers happy, how to lure customers away from competitors down the street, how to package the goods so that the customers will lay out even more money. And then Eugene Peterson says this. He says, the integrity of the pastoral calling, the integrity of the job is showing people God, not relieving anxiety or giving comfort or running a religious establishment. All pastors start out knowing this, or at least having a pretty good idea of it. But when we entered our first parish, we were given a job. Most of the people that we deal with most of the time are dominated by a sense of self, not a sense of God. Insofar as we deal with their primary concern, the self, we direct them, we counsel them, we instruct, we encourage. Insofar as we do that, they give us good marks in our jobs as pastors. Whether we deal with God or not, they don't care overly much. And so, in time, pastors themselves come to not care overly much. Pastors have become, he says, one part minister and three parts masseuse. We're going to do a 10-week Sunday evening series. You'll see on one side of that A5 piece of paper, the side that has the picture on it, you'll see just a short explanation there of what we're going to do over 10 Sunday evenings. 10 ways God is different from us. Now, I've just realized two at the back don't have a sheet, do you? Ben's got a couple of extra here he can bring to you. You are going to need it. So if you can't see one, put your hand up. Ben is, I think everybody's got one, haven't they? Yeah. The reason we're going to do a series like this, I've called it None Can Compare, is simply to help us learn to know God more, to look at him, to think about God, to feel God's weightiness. The weightiness of God you see in the Bible, the reason for that phrase, the weightiness of God, is it's the same word that's used to describe the glory of God. God's greatness, his grandeur, is his weight. He is not light. His total and utter supremacy and uniqueness as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And the way we're going to do it over 10 Sundays is by thinking about some of the attributes of God. Now, when you first meet someone for the first time, you realize, don't you, there are lots of ways of getting to know someone. There are different things that tell you what someone is like and who they are. So straight away we meet someone, what's your name, we say, right away. And then right away we forget it, don't we? And next time you meet them, you ask again, and then a third time. But a person's name reveals the person. I'm a Gibson, a Tulloch, a trainer. And God does this too to us in the Bible. I will reveal my name to you, he says to Moses. So we might do that sometime. One day we might look at the names of God. Each name in the Bible, lots of different names, tell us something about him. I am that I am. Jehovah, El Adonai. Lots of different names. But the other way you know who someone is not just their name, but their attributes. Not just that I'm a McDougall, or a McAllister, or a Smith, or a Jones, but you come to know that I am an athletic McDougall. There's an attribute, you see, athleticism. I am a musical McDonald. She is a kind Smith, gentle Jones. And you see, names and attributes come together. That's how we begin to really know someone. So what are God's attributes? If you turn the page, if you look on the back of that A5 page, I've put a list. That list in front of you has come completely entirely from this book. I've been recommending this book over the last couple of Sundays. There's only one left tonight. I can't even see it. Maybe it's gone as well. But we got 10 of these, and you can get, if you weren't able to pick one up, you can get these through our church website. There's a link to our online bookstall. I'll read you a little bit from this book in a minute in the sermon. Jen Wilkins' book is called None Like Him, 10 Ways God is Different from Us and Why That's a Good Thing. This series that we're going to do is based entirely on this. And if you look at that list on the other side, you've two new words to learn this evening. God has incommunicable attributes and communicable attributes. Now you know, don't you, not to be scared of new words or big words. We need them. Steak feeds you much better than McDonald's. And so we need words like this to teach us things that we didn't know before. Look at that list. Look at the left-hand side. God's incommunicable attributes are the ones that he does not communicate to us as creatures. He can't share them. They are incommunicable. So if you look at that list, he and he alone is those things. But look at the list on the right. These are the things that describe God, just like the things on the left, but they are the things that he communicates to us as well. He is holy and loving and just, and we can be holy and loving and just, and so on, all the way down that list. It's how the world works, isn't it? If you have children, you have communicated, maybe unwittingly, many of your attributes to your children. You have passed things about you onto them, and God does that with us. He shares with us some of who he is and what he's like. But here's the thing, the most glorious, wonderful, beautiful thing for us. There are some things only God can do. Only God is infinite, incomprehensible, self-existent, self-sufficient, eternal, unchanging, omnipresent. That little word omni meaning all present, omniscient, all-knowing, omnipotent, all-powerful, sovereign. What we're going to do this evening is simply start with this first one. God is infinite. I'm going to do these 10 Sunday evenings looking at what only God can do. And here's the application for us. It's going to be different each time. We're going to see different things. But I think this is why this is so helpful. Just put your eye again down that left-hand list. Here's what Jen Wilkin has hit on in her book. It's a really common thing to teach the attributes of God, incommunicable attributes, communicable attributes. We get the whole picture of who God is. But what Jen Wilkin has hit on in this book, here's why this is so helpful. If you look down that left-hand list, what you realize is that we actually spend a huge amount of time trying to do what only God can do. I'm going to show you that in a minute with the first one. But, well, let's take what number four on the list. Isn't it true that we try to be self-sufficient? Number five, eternal. We try and try and try to live forever. Oh, how we long to live forever. We don't want to get old. We want to stay young. We try to be unchanging. Who is happy with getting older? Seeing the body decaying and slowing and breaking. No, we want to arrest the change, don't we? But only God is unchanging. We try to be omnipresent, running around, chasing our tails, try to be all-knowing. Now here's a really big one, I think, right at the bottom of the list. Isn't this true? We would love to be sovereign. All the time, in countless ways, we try to be in control, don't we? Controlling our lives, our relationships, our pains, our futures, our families. We love being in control, and we tend to fall apart when not in control. Trying to do what only God can do is the way to fail as a human being. Trying to do what only God can do is the route to disaster as a man or a woman in God's world. And you see, knowing this about God and knowing this about ourselves, I think this, brothers and sisters, this is some of the deepest, greatest medicine we can ever give ourselves. We need more and more and more of who God is and what He is like. We find health for ourselves, not by looking inwards at ourselves, looking at our personalities and our needs and desires. We find the greatest, deepest health by looking outwards at who God is. When we see how big He is, then we begin to work out where we fit on the map of the world and our own human stories. We find ourselves in life properly by seeing where He is and who He is. I think we could even go as far as saying this. I think this is true, that there is no agony that you have right now, no agony at all, that is not addressed by knowing God more. Doesn't mean the agony will go, but it would be changed. So here's the first one for us this evening. God is infinite. God is infinite. And that just means this. God cannot be limited by any of the ways we put limits on things or people. God has no limits. Westminster Shorter Catechism, question 4. Question is, what is God? And the answer, God is a spirit, infinite, eternal and unchangeable in His being, wisdom, power, holiness, justice, goodness and truth. He is infinite in all those things. There are no limits to Him in any of them. But here's how the Bible teaches that to us. Isaiah chapter 40. So if you have that passage again and those verses 12 to 26 in front of you, just look at this with me. I want you to know, Isaiah says, your God is beyond all measure. He's beyond all measure. What happens here is Isaiah takes certain parts of the world and he puts parts of the world in contrast to each other as a way of talking about the whole earth. So if we were to say today, if we were to say that there was a school fair on Saturday and people came to the fair from north and south and east and west, They came from absolutely everywhere, all over the cities where they came from. And if you just look at the imagery, verses 12 to 14 onwards, 12 to 15, See what Isaiah is referring to? Waters and then to dust. Then he's referring to the heavens and the earth. This is Isaiah's way of drawing our attention to God as the one who made everything. Here are the extremes of the world. The waters, the land, the heavens, the earth. And they are all in God's hand. The heights above, the deepest oceans below, the smallest, tiniest particle of dust, and the top of Mount Everest. Every single bit of the world is in his hands. So what is it about the world and God that Isaiah wants us to see here? There are three ways here that Isaiah says to us, your God cannot be limited. He cannot be measured. Number one, he is beyond all measure of size. God is beyond all measure of size. You see, this is all to do with scale, isn't it? Measurement. Here are four human ways of measuring. You see in those verses, verse 12, the hollow of his hand. Then the span of the hand. A basket and scales. The hand, the breadth of the hand, the basket, the scales are all means of measuring things. And just think about it. What can you measure in the hollow of your hand? I can barely fit into my hand the water that escapes from the bath each night, family bath time. Not a lot. You can't hold a lot, can you, in there? What can you measure with the span of your hand? So you stretch it out. It's about 8 inches, probably. God has a basket. What can you fit in your basket at Sainsbury's? It's not a trolley. It's not the biggest one. You get your own checkout queue with a basket, don't you? You're going to go quickly. It's not much in a basket. What have you got on your scales? In the bathroom or in the kitchen, some flour from the packet, not the whole lot, just a bit of flour. And see what the writer is saying? Here's your measuring devices. You know these measuring devices. Now look at God. What's he got in the hollow of his hand? Isaiah wants you to list them. He's got the Arctic, the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Indian, and the Southern Oceans, all of them just sitting there in one hand. What's God looking at between finger and thumb? Not a lot, just the heavens themselves measured between those two things. What's he got in verse 12 in his basket? The Sahara, the Ngobi, and every other single bit of dust and sand and dirt. It's all there just in the little basket he's got on his arm. Just a few items, not a lot to carry today. What's he got on his measuring scales? Everest, Himalayas, the Andes, the Rockies, all of them there just sitting tucked onto a corner of the scales. See, you name it, all your peaks, all the Monroes you've done, they're all there sitting on God's work surface. Do you know what I think we're meant to notice very deliberately about all these measuring devices? We're meant to notice they are all small-scale measuring tools, aren't they? There is no yardstick here. There's no measuring tape. See, the devices we use to measure really, really small things. Here's the point. The devices we use to measure small things are the devices God uses to measure what look to us really big things. Do you see the poet's punch here? Do you see what Isaiah is saying? God stretches out his span and he gauges the size of the universe. Imagine if one day God decided to build something really, really big. This is just one verse. It's just verse 12. Look how in verses 13 and 14, well, now we move from toolkit, kitchen vocabulary, measuring and so on. Now we move to classroom vocabulary. Here's the second thing. God is beyond all measurement of knowledge. God is beyond all measurement of knowledge. Not just all measurement of size, but all measurement of brain power. See, when you get to verse 13, here we are in the world of prelims, and degrees, the PhD seminar, the MBA in business, the accountancy exams. And the point is, no one gets through any of those things on their own, do they? Whatever you know, someone else taught you. Maybe you know a lot. It simply means someone else has taught you a lot. You've read a lot. Tell me, Isaiah says, when did God ever have to put up his hand and ask for help? None of us have ever drilled an oil well. None of us have ever built a house without asking for help in some way. Probably haven't even built a garden shed without getting a second opinion on it. Where should I put this? Isaiah says, which subcommittee did God ever consult to learn wisdom? What planning permission did God ask for to create a universe? See, within our church family life, it happens every year, doesn't it, this time of year? It is a wonderful, lovely thing. Young people taking exams. Students taking exams. Not the exam taking is lovely. I know that's not lovely. But what I mean is you are filling your mind with learning. Filling your mind with books and literature and sums and knowledge. Your brain is expanding. You are growing. Hope learning becomes infectious to you all through your life. Isaiah says, as you learn and grow, never, ever, ever think you know more or better than God. There is an infinite gulf, a gulf that cannot be measured between our puny, finite minds grasping after truth and the infinite mind of God who has never, ever been stuck on anything. Never unsure about what next step to take. Should I go to this university or that university or this course or that college? It's never happened to God. And as your mind, young people, grows and grows, it's wonderful, it's beautiful. Pursue it if you can with all that you can. As your mind gets bigger and deeper, make sure you measure your intellect and knowledge only by the scale of God's mind. For it is a mind which cannot be measured. One last thing to see here before I give us some applications. God is not just beyond the measure of size, not just beyond the measure of knowledge. Incredibly, Isaiah says, God is even beyond the greatest measure of your worship. God is beyond the greatest measure of our worship. This is incredible. Look at verse 16. Lebanon is not sufficient for altar fires, nor its animals enough for burnt offerings. Before him all the nations are as nothing. They are regarded by him as worthless and less than nothing. You see, Lebanon was famous for its cedar trees. It had amazing amounts of amazing wood. And Isaiah says, imagine if you took every single tree in the whole of Lebanon, every single animal in the whole of the country, and offered them all up to God in one enormous sacrifice. What is he saying? It would not be worthy of him. See, that sacrificial system which God himself gave us, where one sacrifice of one animal was enough to show me that I can have my sins forgiven. One sacrifice. And yet here Isaiah is saying there are not sacrifices enough in all the world for this God. What do you think we're doing when we offer worship to God? Are we coming close to the size and scale and grandeur and majesty of his being every time we offer him worship? What if it's the most wonderful music? What if it is stadium-filled Wembley 90,000 people worth of singing? And it is thunderous and moving? What if you live a life of perfect worship in thought and mind and deed? Put it all together, does it come close to the kind of worship worthy of this size and scale and majesty of God? No. Is Isaiah's answer no? Someone put it like this. I've told you this before. Someone said that the greatest and most beautiful piece of music by J.S. Bach is to God like tinkling chopsticks on the piano. It doesn't mean that it is not beautiful. It doesn't mean that it is wrong to offer the best that we have to God. But here's the thing, Isaiah says, it is not like for like offering. We must not let the greatness of the God we worship be scaled in our minds to the greatness of our worship of God. We must not let the greatness of the God we worship be scaled in our minds to the greatness of our worship of God. Alec Mateer says this, looking at verse 16, he says, over every human effort to move God, over every human effort to meet God's demands, to satisfy His requirements, to maneuver Him to our advantage, and to climb into His good books, over every single one of them, Isaiah writes, not enough. Not enough. That's the idea, isn't it, in verses 15 to 17, that little unit. Not enough. Nothing. When verse 17 says, we are nothing to God, worthless, Isaiah isn't talking about our value to God, he's talking about our stature. It's scale. The nations can be measured, but God can't. Number one way God is different from us, He is infinite. He can't be measured, and we can. Here's what Jen Wilkin says in her book. She says this in her chapter on God is Infinite. On the day that I was born, the doctor who delivered me inscribed my birth records with a firm hand, 7 pounds, 11 ounces, 21 inches. It was the first legally attested evidence I received that I was not God. It's an amazing thing, isn't it? Amazing picture. Babies born in hospitals all over the world. Somehow God has found a way of making sure there's a little tag goes on the hand and feet that says, not God. Not God. Measured, weighed, quantified, boxed, catalogued. No one has ever done that to God. But God put us into a world where we measure our height, our weight, we measure our appearance, our successes, our failures. We take the measure of someone's character and abilities. We measure, we measure, we measure, we weigh all the time. And all of it, you see, the fact that God has put us in a world and put a measuring tape and a ruler in our hands and said, go on, off you go. Go and play. Go make the rest of the world like the garden, Adam, Eve. You'll need a measuring tape. To do that, off you go. Go and catalogue things, put them in order, in place. The fact that God made the world to be like that is meant to teach us we are not like Him. We can be measured, the world can be measured, but He cannot be measured. Because we are creatures and He is God. But friends, here's what happens. I want to show you this as we close. We want to do what only God can do. We want to be infinite like God. I want to give you three ways, three applications. Time, space, and being. Only God's life is infinite in time. You cannot count God's days. Only God's life is infinite in space. You can count the number of spaces you and I are in right now. You can count the number of rooms we're in. It's not hard. The answer is one. But you cannot count the number of spaces God is in right now. God is here, and He's next door, and He's in South Africa and Sydney. And number three, only God's being is infinite. You and I can count the number of things that we can fix and the number of relationships that we can have. But you cannot count the number of things that God can fix. Let me show you what I mean. Here's the three applications. Number one, learn to accept that you are not infinite in time. Learn to accept that you are not infinite in time. You were meant to live forever. That's how the world was built. It's how created human beings were meant to live. But in this fallen world, you will not live forever. And Christian people who know a God like this are people who prepare to die. Only God lives forever. Psalm 90, verse 12. Teach me to number my days. You see the measuring scale? Teach me to number my days that I may gain a heart of wisdom. Teach me to count, Lord. Your days cannot be counted, but mine can. All the days ordained for me, Psalm 139, were written in your book. Your days cannot be counted, God, but my days will be counted. I can have, what, 70 years and 10, if I'm fortunate? And then the grave. Christian people know and Christian people say that that is what life is like under the curse. And this side of the fall, now make no mistake, that is a bitter curse. It is a tragic fall. It is not how the world is meant to be, but it is how the world is. I wonder if you'll agree with me that all around us are people who forget that we are not infinite in time. People forget this thing that only God can do. And people today are doing all they can to live forever. Just think about it. The scientist one day may come along from Silicon Valley, where all this kind of thing is being researched at the minute. It's the leading startup industry. Life extension, extending life as much as possible. One day it may happen that a scientist will come along and say, here is a pill that will make you live until you're 200. We've got it, we've cracked it. This will make you live for hundreds of years. I haven't thought about this in depth, but my first reaction, here's what I think Christian people say. Christian people say, no thanks, I will not take the pill. 200 years like this, with this selfish heart, with this addiction, this daily battle with sin, Christian people say, no, 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 you don't understand. God is infinite. God lives forever. But God is not weightless to me. God is everything to me, and He lives forever. And I do not. And I count my days with humility and wisdom and trust. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of darkness and trouble and ill health and cancer and old age come. Number two, learn to accept that you are not infinite in space. You cannot, and I cannot, be everywhere at all times, on every occasion, in the way that everybody around us might want us to be. Only God fills every space, in every place, in every way, at every time, and God has made you and I limited. Limited this evening to this room, to this group of people, tomorrow to that family, to that job, in that room, for that period of time. Listen to this. Zach, your life is like a 5-alarm fire. You are coming and going in so many directions. I worry about you. Bill's words shook me as a young man. One of my bosses echoed the same sentiment 10 years later. You are doing so many different things, she said. We are afraid you are going to burn out. We want you around here for a long time, so pace yourself, okay? Her voice was soon joined by others. Two colleagues invited me to lunch. Another called on the phone. "We're worried about you," they said. Then I received a letter. It was the old-fashioned kind of letter with a stamp on the envelope. The words were written by hand with a pen. I opened it and heard my mum's voice as I read. "She too must have heard the alarm. Son," she wrote, "a tree has to have roots to provide shade." Do you know, it is possible to grow old, having lived so desperately keen to fill so many spaces and to live in so many different places. It's possible to grow old never having put down roots in one particular place and space. See, God fills the universe, but we're not meant to. The people that I go to for shade in life, people I want to sit beside and talk to and ask for help, nearly always are the people who have lived with roots. One place, a long time, with these people, these neighbours. Just think about it, it's true, isn't it? We return to people like that. We go to people like that for shade, for shelter. Are we the sort of people others one day will come to for help, for shelter, for life? It is a lie, I think, that we believe that although we are bodily present here in one place, limited by space, I think the lie that we quickly believe is that happiness is found over there, not here, in this space. Yes, we're here, but if we could be there, we would be happier. Well, possibly, maybe. Maybe we're simply forgetting that we are finite, not infinite. Maybe we're forgetting that our hearts are restless until they find their rest, not in a new space, but until they find their rest in Thee, O God. What about this one? I don't know if you'll agree. I think our phones tempt us to believe that we are not meant to be in one particular place at one particular time. We connect with people in virtual space somewhere else on the other side of the world or the other side of the city more than the people God has put in front of us at this particular time. Do you know, I think the fact that God is infinite and we are not means we should turn our phone off in a meeting, when we're with someone face to face. Don't check it walking down the road. You are in this particular space and place, not meant to be somewhere else on the other side of the world at that particular moment. We are not infinite in time. We are not infinite in space. And number three, as I finish, you and I are not infinite in being. There's a very good reason for starting with infinite this evening, the first on the list. You see, if you look at it, you look at that list on left and right, that word infinite is not just one attribute of God that you do and then move on to the rest. Actually, that infinite, that attribute describes who God is in all the other attributes. God is infinite because He is infinitely incomprehensible. He is infinitely self-existent, infinitely self-sufficient. Go across to the right-hand list, it's exactly the same. The way in which God is holy and loving and just and good and merciful is infinite. None of them can be measured. None of them can be taped. And so you know what that means for us if you look at the right-hand list? It means that the way that we are holy and loving and just and good and wise, it means it can be counted. It can be measured. Some people are wiser than others. Some people progress further in holiness than others. God can count in us, measure in us, things which in Him cannot be measured. We cannot take in the size and scale and measurement and dimensions of His holiness, but God can count our sins. See, there is a gulf between us and God, isn't there? A gap? God's infinity humbles us and makes us small. But God's infinity makes the wonder of who God is for us in Jesus truly wonderful. Makes the wonder of bread and wine that we're about to eat together truly astonishing. For the infinite God, the God who is all those things on the left-hand column, the God who is all those things, joined Himself in a woman's womb to finite man. The God who cannot change joined Himself to human flesh, which grew and developed. The eternal God who cannot die joined Himself to human nature and lived and died. And in the cross of Jesus, His Son, God found a way to display all of these attributes together: wrath at sin and mercy towards the sinner, holiness and love, holiness in His allergy to sin and His need to punish sin, and yet love in His affection for me and for you, for the sinner, and His desire to wash us clean. The infinite God displays a love here this evening for us which cannot be measured. And so I think it is the greatness and grandeur of God that instead of trying to measure it, God says to us, simply come and eat and taste. If you want to know me, don't try to measure me. Eat me. Eat bread and wine. Come to my table and fall at my feet and worship. Amen.